Hello, everyone, and thanks so much for tuning into the KevCast. I'm your host, Kevin Winder, author of Getting Better When You Can't. This is a podcast that's designed to help you see beyond everything. I believe you'll find the content interesting, engaging, and even life-changing. Please check out my website at www.kevinwinder.com and be sure to sign up for my weekly newsletter entitled Winder's Windshield. Thanks so much for tuning in, and now on to the KevCast. Hello, everyone, and thanks so much for tuning into the KevCast. I am your host, Kevin Winder. Welcome back to another episode of the podcast that I do every single week. I do it on Sunday to help build you up, to encourage you, to strengthen you, to challenge your thinking, and hopefully bring you to a new place. We have been in the series, and it's a little bit of a long series, but I'm getting some great feedback from you, and I appreciate that, so keep it coming. But we are in a series talking about spiral dynamics, and a lot of people are not quite sure what that is, and believe me, you can get into a really heady discussion on it, and that's not my intent. You can read a lot about it from Ken Wilber, Paul Smith. There's a whole bunch of folks who have written about it, and I am approaching it from a very non-textbook kind of way. I'm really just giving you a very, very high-level general description, but I'm showing you the process of how our consciousness changes. Now, this happens to us personally. It happens to us corporately. And so this study is really an evaluation of how we think and how we grow and change and transform how we think. And sometimes we don't. Sometimes we get stuck in a particular stage. And that's what's happening. Well, this week we are looking at postmodernism. And the postmodern mind is something that most people are very conscious of. As many of you know, I used to serve as a pastor and be a part of a church that was part of a church planting network. So we coached a lot of church upstarts and things like that. And one of the things that was always the subject of the conversation was how do we minister or speak or reach people with a postmodern mentality. And there's a lot of assumptions about that, and we are seeing it play out in our stages I'm going to get into here in a little bit. But today we're really going to talk about the ruin of postmodernism. And as you know, if you haven't tuned in, please go back and listen to the previous post. But the ruin of a consciousness or an ideal or a mindset is not its eradication. The ruin of it is essentially its transformation into something wider. So you take the good things that it produces and you bring them into a wider aspect of the truth. So this whole process is really raising consciousness is the same thing as saying growing into conformity to the truth, right? Okay, so what difference does it make anyway? I mean, if we have a category for our stages of consciousness, I mean, aren't people just going to do whatever they want to do anyway, right? What matters is how we live our lives, right? Now, those questions are not really seeking an answer. And if you can tell, there's a little bit of a hint inside those questions, right? Those are truly postmodern type questions. You know, behind them is that mindset and a life experience that is, by many measures, very progressive. Right? It's asking questions like, what good is this? Why should I care? And it's not just coming out of apathy, although that is certainly a part of the postmodern mind. It's not always so. You know, postmoderns are very inclusive and they're very tolerant. They're very forward thinking. And that's because they're benefactors of the previous generation, Generation X, some baby boomers who operated with a ton of self-discipline. They worked under a ton of structure and they had an orderly process for things, but they still asked the question. They still pushed the boundaries, these previous generations. And as a result, they have these kind of free, wider, inclusive, tolerant thinking, which they passed on to their kids who grew up in these free, wider, tolerant thinking. But there's also the fact that a lot of these boomers and Xers who struggled under certain institutions are trying to reduce institutional control and open up the freedom gates for their children and those who they teach and coach. And so what you have in postmodernism is a stage of consciousness that is really comfortable with ambiguity. But it's not comfortable with specificity. So when you get down to the particulars and the nitty-gritty and the details, they're less interested. When you start really pointing out flaws and dialing it in, they're less interested. But if you want to talk about, you know, different opinions working together with in a framework, a loose framework, they're going to be good with that. They're going to be okay with open-ended questions or questions that don't have a complete answer. The gray, you know, these are not always black and white people. But as a result, they do have a little bit shorter of an attention span because they're not used to actually working it through to a solution. They're just comfortable with the ambiguity. And it doesn't place a high value on the past. And the views of authority are really seen as captors rather than mentors, right? I mean, growing up, if you're Generation X or you're a baby boomer, the authority was your guide. They were somebody you respected. You cherished your elder because of their age and their status and their presence and their job title and all those kinds of things. But in a postmodern mind, those things are less important. They're less valued. And they tend to reduce everything to its best part. Like, just break it down to brass tacks. Give me the most essential part. You know, Heist to listen to, you know, music and buy the whole album. And I know I'm dating myself here, but you'd have to buy the whole album or the tape cassette or the CD in order to get the best song, right? This is a generation. The postmodern mind is not going to buy 7 bad songs in order to get 2 good ones. They're going to eat the best part of the cinnamon roll. They're going to eat the middle, right? They can immediately download the good songs that they want and not buy all the other stuff. Now, we might look back and say, this is all bad. I'm not taking shots. I'm simply giving descriptions of how the postmodern mind manifests itself in the world. Now, we all recognize this stage of postmodernism. And millennials, and these are our younger college-age people right now, they are unfairly wearing the label as the postmoderns. They're not exclusively postmoderns. Trust me, there are many baby boomers. There are maybe many Generation X and some even, of the other generation that are postmoderns in the way that they think, just because their consciousness has raised. So it's not that millennials are exclusively, it's not as though it were exclusively a generational issue, right? It's a consciousness issue. And one reason that so many in our culture, especially young people, have a postmodern consciousness is that they have outgrown the tribal, the warrior, and the traditional and scientific frameworks that I've talked about in the previous weeks. And so these would be the parents of the millennials, right? These are the baby boomers, the baby busters, the Generation X who actually, you know, busted out of these very, constricting mindsets. They saw the problems. The questions that they had were bigger than their particular system could answer. And so they graduated out of them, right? Now, because of that, they possess the valuable contribution of each stage that they transcended but included, right? They also understand that each stage has its own deficiencies. And so there are part of our culture that are true postmoderns for the right reasons, because they actually got through it. Now, for these people, their open-minded acceptance of diversity and plurality, it comes from suffering under closed minds. That's why they have an open mind. They've lived through the pain that a closed mind produces. Others have struggled, you know, they like diversity and plurality because they've struggled against institutional forces that were insurmountable in regard to their racism and their separatism. You know, their unification was only based upon if you look and sound and dress and talk just like me. And so they pushed out of that framework, and now they have a very big picture of diversity and plurality that is healthy and wise and beneficial. You know, their reductionism has taught them to separate the wheat from the chaff, to find the good part and not, and to let the other part rest. You know, they know the difference between the container and the contents. Now, these are very high-level postmoderns, and they are in and through our culture. Some of them are in our in leadership positions. Some of them are not. And some of them don't even know that they are. They just have a good perspective on life. Now, other postmoderns that are in there are prevalent. It is due to the generational juxtaposition of the millennials. Now, for those younger people, you know, younger minds, they were given postmodernism by their parents or by their teachers or by certain institutions that made changes. But unlike their parents, who have a traditional context or anchor points for their postmodern consciousness, many younger postmoderns have a very free-floating, or it's a situational compass that views true north as relative, right? They're into relativism. They can't help it. It's the byproduct of this. When you generate or you grow up as a generation that has particular values, but you didn't have to live through the other stages of consciousness that produce the opposite value. This is why education has had to adapt. You know, we hear this thing about new math, right? Well, is there really a new way of doing math? Yes, there is. Why? Because the frameworks are not the same. Teaching is not the same. To educate our postmodern world who are in the juxtaposition of the generations, they have to learn a different way. The frameworks are not the same. You know, a relativist will always be suspect of any rules, any traditions, or any practices that don't seem relevant to the immediate life. And this is why education, this is why ministry, why churches, and all these types of people who are trying to reach younger generations are having to adapt and struggle, is because the tools that they used don't work anymore. And man, as a church planner for 25 years, I can tell you, the church is barely getting this. Even the ones that say they're relevant and they can reach modern people, they are still stuck doing things in an old traditional way. Those who break out of the system are much more successful and often have a much younger congregation. Go to a mainline denominational church that's doing things the same way that they did it for the last 50, 60, 80 years, and I guarantee you most of the people are going to be over the age of 60, if not 70. That's the way it is. Now, often, the most transformative thing in the life of a postmodern is when they learn structure and they learn disciplined practice. That's transformational for somebody with this mindset. Frameworks are never successful when they're forced upon others, especially a postmodern. But a postmodern with a solid framework can really be an unstoppable force. But if you remove true north, then a postmodern can be an uncontrollable force. The immature postmodern will not play by the rules, and they will only deconstruct everything. The mature will use a greater rule of love to determine if rules have benefited humanity, and then they're going to reconstruct them for better outcomes. You see, because the mature or the postmodern person is tolerant of anything, they are tolerant of anything but intolerance. And boy, don't we see that, right? The immature postmodern creates rules to organize people, but when they do create a rule or a system or a government, it's usually way more severe than the strictest that we would have found in the traditional stage, because they didn't have that growing up. So now that they organize themselves and they see that they need some kind of a structure, it's often way more strict if it's not done under the right motivation. And since postmodern consciousness is an integrated collective, it's kind of the buffet of different worldviews that have come along, it can be a challenge to really pin it down. In fact, most people move in and out of this level of consciousness. It's proving that many are actually bouncing back and forth between lower and higher states rather than stages of consciousness. So a postmodern is someone who's going to, without knowing it, revert into tribalism. They're going to revert into warrior stage. They're going to lean upon their scientific stage. They're going to go into traditionalism at times. And they don't realize that the integration and the back and forth of all these is really tipping the toe into postmodernism. So, for example, let's just look at this election. The postmoderns assumed that the traditional stage and the exclusive mindset of the traditional conservative party was outdated and outgunned, right? We saw this. I mean, Hillary Clinton was 100% sure she was going to win. And this mindset kind of devalued the traditional civic duties like voting. And as a result, only a fraction of the postmoderns turned out to vote compared to the previous elections. So after losing the election, now the postmoderns have doubled down their rigor on civic participation because now civic participation is seen as vital. It's relevant. Whereas in November, civic participation was not relevant. Do you see how this is playing out? And if you really want to know, most of our world's problems stem from the partial amalgamation of a postmodern consciousness. I mean, we're watching the traditional or scientific stages push back against postmodernism by trying to assert a regressive path back to heavy-handed, top-down, unarguable compliance to the rules as the only cure. And of course, we know that doesn't work. It does work for some, right? You can take a postmodern, you put them in the military, and that system of rules and authority can become really powerful for them. But if you try and hire a bunch of postmoderns and then run your business in an old-fashioned way without explaining why you're doing it, you're going to have a mutiny on your hands. Now, it's really interesting. Ironically, those who have their feet firmly planted in a structure or in law are the ones who are able to transcend postmodernism. So in this sense, the ruin of postmodernism will be a postmodern person who gains structure, or it's going to be a traditionalist who gains an open mind. See, both are equally capable of regressing into chaos, though. And if they suppress the truth of the opposition, that's exactly what happens. And we're watching that unfold every single day in our nightly news. So the problems in our world then are actually the perfect opponent that we require if we are to rise up and grow into our potential. These problems are not despite our consciousness, but because of it. And without the suffering that they produce, we would remain small and stuck. We'd never push against our boundaries. We'd never question certain things, right? And so it's a good thing that all of this disruption is happening, if you ask me. It's going to force us to grow up, to take issues very, very seriously. I think we're seeing that right now. As we mature, we begin to see more clearly how love is the only possible thing that can raise us up. And once again, Scripture points the way. You know, Paul in 1 Corinthians says, love is patient and kind. Love does not envy or boast. It is not arrogant or rude. It does not insist on its own way. It's not irritable. Love is not resentful. It doesn't rejoice at wrongdoing, but it rejoices with the truth. Love bears all things. Love believes all things. Love hopes all things. Love endures all things. Love never ends. And so let me ask you, if you are going through this series and you're trying to assess your maturity, this is the litmus test. Ask yourself if your team or your tribe sounds anything like the description I just read. Do you have rudeness, arrogance, resentfulness? Do you rejoice at wrongdoing? I mean, just watch the news. Is that anything close to love? If not, we've got some work to do. We've got way more consciousness to rise up into, which means we're far more immature than we possibly realize. We always want to assess ourselves as farther along than we really are. But honesty is really the one way we get out. So, of course, in order to live like this, something extraordinary must happen. I mean, if people are really going to move into a world based upon love, a consciousness that is motivated by love, that is based upon love, and that reflects and promotes love, something amazing has to happen. And we are going to visit this next week as we examine the highest, at least the highest presently known, stage of consciousness. I hope you'll come back. Thanks so much for joining the KevCast, where we learn to see beyond everything. I hope this content has helped you, and I'd love to hear from you if you have any questions or comments or feedback. Until next time, I hope you have an awesome day, and I can't wait to have you come back real soon.